The Heather Bry House seems perfect from the outside. A Victorian mansion nestled in the Scottish Highlands, offering a nanny position with an astounding $55,000 salary. For Rowan Kane, it's the opportunity of a lifetime, especially after being passed over for promotion at her nursery job. But perfection always comes with fine print. The warning signs are there from the start. Four nannies have quit in 14 months, and rumors of hauntings cling to the property like morning mist. Inside, the house is a jarring contradiction. Victorian exterior with ultra-modern interior, complete with a sophisticated, happy smart home system, controlling everything from lights to security. Cameras watch every room, allowing the parents to monitor their children remotely. It's the kind of place where convenience blurs uncomfortably into surveillance. What's more disturbing is the property's history. Originally called Strewing House, it contained one of Britain's few poison gardens, where a child mysteriously died decades earlier. Local rumors whisper of multiple tragedies, drownings, suicides, and even murder. Yet, despite these red flags, Rowan's eyes reflect a hungry desperation during her interview. She wants this job, this house, this life, no matter what dark secrets lurk beneath its perfect surface. "Please help me. I didn't kill anyone." These desperate words come from Rowan Kane, riding from HMP Charnworth in the Scottish Highlands to Mr. Wrexham, a London barrister specializing in complex criminal cases. Accused of murdering a child at Heather Bray House, Rowan insists on her innocence, while her court-appointed solicitor seems convinced otherwise. Prison life is brutal for this educated, middle-class Englishwoman whose accent makes her a target among Scottish inmates. She endures sleepless nights, constant noise, and isolation while awaiting trial. What gives her letters credibility is Rowan's admission of mistakes. She acknowledges how her panicked police statements appear incriminating and offers to reveal uncomfortable truths if someone would hear her complete story. These letters establish the stakes while raising crucial questions. Is Rowan truly innocent or crafting an elaborate defense? As her narrative unfolds, the truth emerges as more complex than either possibility suggests. The Ellencourt children embody dysfunction. 8-year-old Maddie becomes Rowan's chief adversary, refusing to dress, spitting toothpaste, and spelling "We hate you" with alphabet spaghetti. Their relationship devolves into not about caregiving, but about winning, dominance, and war. 5-year-old Ellie makes disturbing references to someone who makes them do things they don't want to do, while baby Petra hurls food with precision. 14-year-old Rhiannon's bedroom door warns, "Fuck off, keep out, or you die," in lipstick. Everyone at Heather Bray House harbors secrets. The first revelation comes when Rhiannon exposes Rowan as Rachel Garhart, who used her flatmate's credentials to secure the job. Rachel's deeper secret, Bill Ellencourt is her father, who abandoned her pregnant mother years ago. She tracked him to Scotland, drawn to meet the family he chose over hers, with only an R necklace as a keepsake. Jack Grant, the handsome groundskeeper and Rachel's lover, is married with a son. Rhiannon reveals the previous nanny, Holly, had an affair with Bill. Even the house conceals secrets, the locked attic, poison garden, and history of death. Strange occurrences begin immediately. Rowan hears footsteps above her room where no space exists and finds a locked door with a cool breeze beyond. Nightly disturbances escalate. Her window opens mysteriously, the doorbell rings at midnight, and deafening music blasts through the house's speakers. Personal items vanish, including her silver R necklace, while a creepy doll's head from the attic appears on her couch. In the attic, Jack and Rowan discover broken furniture, smashed dolls, and walls covered with "We hate you" in childish writing. The children's behavior grows increasingly disturbing. Rowan finds Maddie's drawing of a girl trapped behind the poison garden gate with blood on her face, and later, another showing a house with blackened windows and one pale face peeping out. On the back is an unfinished note. "To the new nanny, my name is Katja. I am writing you this note because I wanted to tell you to, please be, then nothing. These children embody the novel's exploration of innocence and malevolence, existing as both victims and perpetrators of cruelty. After Rhiannon discovers Rachel's true identity, Rachel plans to call Sandra the next morning, expecting dismissal. That night, she finds her bedroom window mysteriously open. Checking on the children, she discovers Maddie's bed contains only pillows arranged to look like a sleeping child. Panic-stricken, Rachel searches the house with Rhiannon and Petra. Fearing Maddie might have entered the poison garden, she runs outside, only to find Maddie lying dead beneath her bedroom window, her nightdress soaked with blood. The police question Rachel repeatedly, suspecting she threw Maddie from the window. Rachel's covered bedroom camera, fake identity, estranged relationship with Bill, and affair with Jack all become evidence against her. Even her accounts of strange house occurrences make her appear unstable. This powerfully demonstrates how circumstances can make an innocent person look guilty. Rachel's deceptions, though not malicious, create a pattern that undermines her credibility. The novel's final twist emerges from letters found in a prison wall years later. Jean McKenzie writes to Rachel, affirming her innocence and revealing Ellie's confession. She pushed Maddie to her death. Ellie explains that Maddie had been sabotaging previous nannies using their mother's old phone to play videos through the Happy System, creating phantom footsteps. Maddie placed the doll's head on Rachel's lap and planned to poison her with garden berries. The night Rachel was out, Maddie intended to climb into the attic to trigger alarms. When Ellie tried stopping her, arguing Rachel was nice, Maddie insisted she would make Rachel leave. During their argument, Ellie pushed Maddie, causing her fatal fall. This revelation reframes everything. The ghostly phenomena were Maddie's elaborate scheme to drive Rachel away, a child's psychological warfare, not supernatural events. Yet the novel avoids simple moral judgments. Maddie acted from fear and insecurity. Ellie's push was a moment of childish anger with tragic consequences. And Rachel, though innocent of murder, had committed deceptions that made her vulnerable to suspicion. The turn of the key delivers a chilling reminder. Our greatest dangers aren't supernatural, but human. We install smart systems and trust caregivers, employers, and lovers, all leaving us vulnerable. The novel reimagines gothic elements for the digital age, replacing creaking floorboards with remotely controlled lights and music. Security cameras become tools of surveillance, while the poison garden metaphorically represents deceptive appearances. The story's effectiveness lies in its ambiguity. Are these supernatural manifestations or psychological warfare? By blending ghost story elements with modern technology, the novel weaponizes smart home features against inhabitants, speaking directly to contemporary anxieties. The footsteps may be ghostly, but the cameras watching Rachel's every move are real. The true horror isn't what lurks in darkness, but who might be watching from the other side of the screen.